Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around your iPad and get ready for another episode of the podcast This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
I like this time the full preacher pose you took.
No, these things are coming back. I was on a radio station in Milwaukee yesterday, and their most popular show is the rerunning of a 70s radio, old-time radio show.
70s.
They get 2.0s. Well, and the guy made it in the 70s, but it was based on those 30s old-time radio.
Oh, wow.
Suspense, The Shadow.
Right.
Most popular show on terrestrial radio in Milwaukee.
That's very strange.
How crazy.
People
want to escape. That's what I figure. Let's escape to a better time.
to that end, tell people what you heard in a meeting this morning.
Well, that was yesterday morning. I heard this older gentleman who was obviously conservative, and it was the statement of this exact moment in history, which is, I'm tired of people not listening to each other.
It's literally when people hear two separate things. Whatever they're listening to, they hear two separate feeds.
It's crazy.
One thing's being said, two feeds are received. It's crazy. And someone who's sitting in the middle here, the moderate, I'm you know, trying to hear the reality, I also see the two different feeds going out.
There's three realities. There's the reality, and then there's the two polar.
The two feeds, yeah. You're absolutely right. So
and you just get to pick yours, which one you agree with the most.
Well, that's true. Sometimes I do flip back and forth
me
to
too.
One or the other. And you become so.
And that's Suboxone and harm reduction and replacement therapy. I've changed my tune about that.
Now tell me why.
Because kids are dying.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, we created a generation of young adults not ready for this world. Mm. And so we're responsible for them. That's what I think. As the parent of a millennial.
Yeah. And so as such, we have to adjust the way we think about recovery, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Just survival. So I was in Milwaukee with the Don't Die Wisconsin guys. I finally figured out. Remember, I've been doing this don't die thing for a year and a half. I finally figured out what it is.
What is it?
It's the communication bridge between the recovery community, the recovery industry, the 12-step community, the harm reduction community, the needle exchange, social services of a city, Medicaid. It's the place where everybody can join and have conversations, and that's what's going on in Milwaukee. It's amazing.
So, in other words,
because you've got abstinence-based, hardcore people buddying up with and seeing the impact that the needle exchange has had on Milwaukee. You can just look at the numbers. The city councilman was at the event on Friday. The numbers just plummet from 2015
to
2017.
In cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, they're not needle exchange programs. They're needle distribution programs. So you end up with hundreds of thousands of needles all over the street.
Oh no!
So they have a public health
collection.
Problem.
They're getting naloxone out to the population. They have naloxone training. They have HIV and AIDS testing, hepatitis C.
This is Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's Milwaukee. I said it in all my social media.
Yeah.
L.A. and New York could learn something from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Funny you would say that. I was in North Dakota while you were in Milwaukee, and I would say the same thing of them. The governor there is enlightened. His wife is a recovering person, and they are pushing hard with creative measures. And they have a very diverse situation. They have, I think, four different Indian nations living in the western part of the state, and they don't actually have any authority with them, but they want to help, and they want to help them. And you can imagine the genetic stuff there is massive.
The sense I got in all the different – I went all around to all the different organizations over a three-day period of time. And one thing that's so different than L.A. or New York there wasn't a victim mentality, these poor victims. Mm. There was just a solution-oriented acceptance of the facts of what was going on.
Yeah. And are we talking about the homeless population?
Yeah, homeless population, yeah. Addict population. They have a huge – they had an 80-year-old person overdose on OxyContin.
Good times.
Because they had it broken down. The city council member is an outstanding guy. I forget his name now. It's a very peculiar three names.
Are they putting people with chronic mental health needs into places where they can get chronic mental health care?
They have for it seems like there's a huge focus on the older population, because there's the addict population, mostly harm reduction and the needle exchange, okay. And the the absence.
Right, because these are people that could work. They're able bodied except for their addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's this other population.
Well, that's chronic mental ill.
Yeah, that's right. What it is. Yeah. But there's still, I mean, you know, and I know. If we were to really properly treat the mentally ill in this country, yeah. It's going to cost a pretty penny.
Well, but they could – I suppose that's true. But I'm not sure the way they're spinning their wheels isn't as expensive. I mean, just in Los Angeles, there's literally millions of dollars available. Nah.
It's not even spent.
I know. They don't know what to do with it because
– Well, it's hard to get people engaged.
It's not politically expedient to engage people that don't want care. In other words, it's the noble homeless person. They're just there because they want to be. No. They're chronically mentally ill. They need constant care and structure and living environments and
supervision. Well, I was high in the 80s, as you know.
I do know something
about that. Remember when they first emptied out the mental health hospitals and the laws changed and everything? You didn't see this huge uptick in schizophrenics running through the cities,
it's funny you would say that, because a friend of mine, I had a birthday party recently,
I
appreciate that. That was quite an event.
That was crazy.
and
you don't want to know the funniest, like there was crazy funny stuff all night, but you didn't see the funniest part. So Tom Arnold, I felt, was... he was vibrating, and I kept hugging him and going, "I love you, Tom. Are you okay?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, you know how he is." So he got to know Chrissy throughout the night, and then he was valet parking right behind us, and he hugged Chrissy goodbye and said, "Your dad is one of the greatest guys in this city."
Your dad is
he's
my dad.
Tom Arnold.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's Bob's wife. But by the way, that's up at Dr.com, the entire podcast from that.
Oh, my God. What is that, four-hour podcast?
No, that was an hour and 5 minutes.
You're kidding.
That's all it was. Yeah. We zoomed through it.
It was so stressful. You weren't stressed?
A little bit. You'll hear it. But let me go back
but
to the –
what? So what
let
happened
me go back to the uptick.
In like 84, 85 on the streets of L.A.,
hang on.
What was going on?
Well, it just so happened some Caleb Nation, who runs our website, gave me – a giant book of New York Times headlines on my birthday across the ages, starting from 1958, the day I was born.
Wow.
And I was looking through it yesterday, and 1991, huge thing about the homeless crisis. 1991, we're going to take care of this homeless problem. It's overwhelming New York City. We got it. 1991. And I remember in the 80s.
When did they close Patton and all the mental hospitals?
They did not. Here's what happened. They sort of...
the government, is what I'm saying.
The government did it over multiple administrations. First thing that happened was my profession went, we got this. We got medication now. It's going to make everybody happy. We can cure these schizophrenics with medication. It's cruel.
Hey, I've been hearing that recently about another epidemic.
Yeah, I know. We'll get to that in a second. It's cruel to put them in a hospital. It's cruel. We have these medicines that we can restore them to work. An excessive optimism about the medication. All right, number one. So my profession started the whole thing. Then new doctors just didn't want to work in these hospitals, so the quality of care started deteriorating. The people that were in there were overworked, overwhelmed. Then the government started getting behind the medical profession, saying, yeah, why do we sustain these things? They're unnecessary. We got medication for these people. They started systematically shutting them down over multiple generations. The big shutdown was during Jimmy Carter, but the ultimate closure was during Ronald Reagan. So he just finally put the final nail in it. There's like a few left. Let's close them. Forget it. And that was that. And that was then in the 80s, you start seeing this huge uptick in homeless. And by the 90s, it's overwhelming the cities, and they're going to take care of it. Good job, guys.
So were there people red waving red flags in your community saying, hey, we thought these people would take their medicine, but they're not?
Correct. And then no one had their eye on that ball, to be fair. There was then understanding very quickly that schizophrenia didn't like to take their meds, and what are we going to do?
But the shots, the monthly shots.
Yes, I agree with you. But you can't force people.
They need to be mandated.
No kidding. But to do that, you have to expand conservatorship, which there's now finally a pilot program in California to do this. Thank God. Thank you, the new mayor of San Francisco, London Breed. She's been behind this. A guy named Weiner in the state of California. One good guy that I've known so far in the state of California Senate or
and assembly. How does it work? It's
conservatorship. Yeah, you aren't capable to manage your life. We have to take over.
Yeah, but see, who's accepting that? Because if you remember in the late 90s, I had conservatorship over family friends.
These are professional.
I'm legally responsible for that person. I don't want to be legally
responsible
for that.
Professional conservators. So let's get our guest involved. You don't have to go on a day about
speaking
this.
Of, well, route of administration is what comes to mind.
Well, not just route. Yes, long acting solutions.
And we met at one of that. We have our kids went to the same preschool.
Brady Grenier, go ahead and introduce Brady if you want. He works for BioCorex. BioCorex.
It's a cutting edge on routes of administration of harm reduction. I mean, that's in a nutshell.
Well, this
how
is
I
the harm.
See it.
We work in the naltrexone. Right.
That's not harm reduction, in my opinion.
It can for alcohol. That's a
okay.
That's
deal.
A thing.
Yeah.
You know, the testing for it was for alcohol.
I know. Well, the big breakthrough was the injectable long acting. If you remember, that was the one that caught everyone's attention.
The Vivitrol,
because it suddenly
it in France that they got?
No, it was here. It was a huge study, and the Vivitrol population did better than any other form of treatment. And people went, "That's not possible! It's impossible! How's that possible?" But it got everyone's attention and focus. If you remember, we had We had someone in here advocating low-dose naltrexone for alcohol. Remember this? We interviewed people who had really good results with it.
Doctors at Los Encinas 20 years ago wanted that.
Yeah. And now you guys have it. So let's talk about alcohol first.
That's our company actually started out several years ago just alcoholism. That's the only thing that we had treated. We started out as a clinic in Santa Ana, California that was treating alcoholism with this naltrexone implant that had come in from Australia.
So naltrexone is the opioid blocking molecule that is in Vivitrol. It's also the same thing that you squirt up the nose to
reverse an overdose.
I believe it's
a mood stabilizer also.
Well, then naloxone, it's a cousin.
It's all the same stuff.
Opioid antagonist.
Same idea,
Yeah, same concept. Yeah, so we started out with alcohol only, and it works a little differently for alcohol than it does for opioids. It's for
it
alcohol.
Doesn't work that good for opioids.
Well, it
depends.
Well, I've got this opinion, and I know it's just an opinion. It's just of our observations and personal experience. I know Drew says all of it affects the brain the same way. I'm just saying the 932 drugs that affect the brain, they're in one category, and then opioids are in a separate category.
Yes,
people will sell their children for opioids.
Yes, in terms
So when we always lump it together with alcohol and cocaine or whatever,
The syndromes are different. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Well, but with opioids, and that's the epidemic that we just had.
The worst
drug that you would sell your children for.
Yeah.
Which a friend of mine did, a friend of ours did.
Ooh,
I won't say it on
the air.
Oh
my God! Oof.
Went to prison for it too.
For selling their children
to child porn.
Oh, whoa.
For heroin.
Man.
Well, where do you hear that? You hear people doing that for alcohol? Cigarettes?
No, not really. No, not at all.
So opioids are this separate, different category that I don't think can be totally pharmacologically managed, but I think the other drugs can. I really believe that.
I don't think anything could be totally pharmacological.
You'll have more success with giving Valium to alcoholic ladies, and then they'll stop not drink as much. Giving Adderall to stimulant addicts, and they won't use as much. That's
for a while.
That's replacement therapy.
Let's go back to alcohol. So stick with that. So the data on alcohol.
There's not a lot of data when it comes to naltrexone implants per se with alcohol. There was one study that's I don't know the name of the.
What did you observe?
Most of the studies come with for opioids, but what we observed, with alcohol, because that's all we were doing. I actually came across this little clinic I was in the radio business actually before, and before that I was a nurse. But I came across this clinic, and they told me how great this implant was working for alcohol. And I had the staff survey all the patients at the time. They had about 125 patients they had treated. They were able to contact 77 of the patients and the families. Of course, this is all subjective after the fact.
Right.
But, you know, they still had a good relationship. You could tell if someone's, you know, off the wagon or not for the most part.
Right.
And we found that and this was 2 years after the clinic had opened. And it was across the board, it was around 85% of these individuals still reported being sober, or they maybe felt the wagon but came back on really easily.
Right.
Over the course of that year, we checked.
That is something I noticed.
We checked at 6, 12, 18, and 24
months. I'm even more practical than that. The Vivitrol shots that are given to alcoholics at Allo Treatment Centers where I work, they want it the next month too, and they start talking about it.
Yeah,
I want so I got to get my Vivitrol shot.
Feel like it
am
really
I
helps.
Gonna? They know the difference. Yeah. Opiate addicts are like, I don't care.
Well,
I'm telling you, because opiate addicts want to use opiates.
Yeah, yeah. So hold on. So I totally agree with you, and it's even some stimulant addicts I've seen respond to Vivitrol occasionally. But to your what your data suggests to me though is obviously it's a great response.
It works.
Yeah, I know it does.
The data's not in, but it works.
But again, the biggest problem we're having with all of these treatments is how do you select the right population, the right patient for treatment? I think the most honest way to deal with substance research is loss to follow-up is using, period. Just that's it. So
that's not how Arnold saw it back in the 90s.
Loss to follow-up is using. And so you essentially – so really you're at about 60%, 70%, which is still great data. It's still great data. But that means that there's a population that didn't respond. We need to know what that was. You know, what is it about them that they didn't respond? And maybe they're using other substances or who the hell knows.
Yep.
Still, and we have talked to a number of people that had very marked response to the alcohol naltrexone thing. And I observed early on – I've been – you know, I've seen the whole cycle of this thing over 25 years. And when we used to use naltrexone orally, and then we used the Vivitrol, and you're absolutely right about people, the relapses weren't as sustained. They seemed not to be as rewarding, so they could get back into the game more easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they reported they had less craving, less drive.
A lot of people get confused about the terminology because the terminology switches every 5 or 7 years. I started saying risk reduction.
Oh, I like that.
Because what I'm trying to do with these millennial kids, I mean, they're literally dying like flies, right? We want to reduce that risk to them. So if we can get opioid blockers in their system by hook or by crook or whatever.
Well, so why not heavy doses of naltrexone? Why not that? Why not complete opioid blockade so they can't?
I don't think you go high enough. I've thought of that too. I don't think the average dose works for these kids that are doing fentanyl.
I agree.
More studies definitely needed on fentanyl, but there is one out there many years ago where they tested fentanyl with naltrexone, implanted for it, and it did have it did block it, but we don't know what is that dose, what's the nanogram per milliliter in the blood level that you need, because naltrexone is an interesting drug that works different in different doses for people. You have low dose naltrexone for fibromyalgia and autism and HIV. There's all sorts of different levels.
Yeah.
And for you need 2 nanograms for complete blockade from overdose.
Yeah.
But if you have 1 nanogram or 0.5, you may get the craving reduction for alcohol. Mm-hmm. Higher levels above 5 nanograms in Australia, they're seeing stopping cravings for crystal meth.
So
which
where
is
the
big problem over there?
What are they? Where is the real research?
That's the next epidemic.
Yeah.
But it's already,
we're in it.
Where is the real research going? Where do the naltrexone advocates want it to work?
The problem,
most?
Bob, is they're so – this is what is driving me crazy. This drives me out of my mind. Naltrexone is a extremely effective and super promising methodology that should be in everyone's armamentarium. But they're so overwhelmed with enthusiasm for buprenorphine that they won't even do the research.
I told you, opiate addicts like opiates.
Yes,
yes. Of course they do.
They're tired of researching naltrexone.
Yeah,
And there's no patent on the molecule, so you're not going to have big pharma come behind it unless you have to look at the delivery of it. So it's not big enough.
Bob, do you hear that?
I know. I tell kids all the time because a lot of times the kids I'm dealing with. Their insurance either won't cover the Vivitrol shot or they...
How much does an implant cost?
Well, and there's varying types. Yeah. We don't sell implants, so we're not a pharmacy. We actually do the program, and it comes with it. So it's compounded. So, and it ranges. There's so many different types.
And you have social services and counseling.
Yeah, we have peer support and counseling. So we do a whole
– You have all that.
Yes.
But what if somebody wanted – I'm just curious about cost.
I can tell you that it's
– To block opiates.
There's different types of implants. They last from 2 to 6 months, depending on the variety and individual. I can tell you that – It's cheaper than Vivitrol extrapolated out.
Oh, for sure.
Well, Vivitrol is still $600 a month.
Well, it's on the low end. It's $14 retail, $600 or $700.
But it's also a matter of insurance covering it, because none of the people I'm dealing with are going to pay $600 for it out of pocket. No. So insurance was paying for it in the beginning, and over the last year and a half, they just less and less insurance.
Here's the problem with the injectable too, because I purchased one under someone's plan to go through it and see the process.
Yep.
And the insurance, it was a good insurance. The deductible, the out of pocket was $926.
Yeah, see,
insurance paid $300 something. So I got that. We never use it. It's still sitting in the refrigerator, actually. But I'm thinking, if you're an individual who gets the shot, the naltrexone works no matter what form you're delivering it in. It's going to work.
I agree.
So
if you're gonna orally feel, is a little weird.
Because they have a lot of peaks and troughs.
Yeah, but parenteral use, yes, I agree.
So you're going to feel good with it. Yeah. Now, if you're thinking, okay, this thing's going to last a month, it's really about 22 days, actually.
Yeah.
So if you feel good, now you're thinking, I have to schedule that appointment next month to get another shot that's literally a pain in the ass.
Yep.
And I'm going to have to pay another $900 something, but I feel great. So maybe let me just see if I need another one or not.
My patients stretch it out.
You don't get that next injection. So you fall off the wagon again. Now you have to start. You have to detox all over again. Now you lose them. So that's why when it comes to blockade therapy like naltrexone, single administration longer is better than shorter.
And guess what? Guess what form of treatment is acceptable for physicians?
What?
Naltrexone. But we would never treat ourselves with buprenorphine. Only our patients. Only our patients.
Airline pilots can't get
it. Can't get it. Lawyers were a little bit weird about it. Anybody that I just keep asking my peers, why is it we clearly don't treat ourselves with it, nor would we ever. The data does not support it.
What do they say?
And yet all patients receive this?
What is an open-minded physician say?
They just look stare. They stare back at them blindly.
It has to impair you some.
Of course it does. Of course it does. And it's why is it? Our patients, all of them, it's good for them, but none of us. And there's this alternative, naltrexone, that we do use for us. Why don't we use that for some of the patients? Why don't we figure out which patients to use which drug on? It's just insane. What's it going on Instagram? Any questions coming off there?
Great time over here.
They're having a great time.
a lot of comments.
Too technical.
About what?
We're firm believers in buprenorphine and all the other therapies.
Yeah, I am too.
It's excessive enthusiasm that I'm concerned with. Let's liven it up for entertainment
because I want to.
Let's hear what Instagram's going on. Then you
Milner,
can have your entertainment.
Our system is responsible for this addiction problem. Change the system. Solve the problem.
What system would they like to solve?
Is that should I have said that?
The human system.
Well, the issue is that they say 10% of people are in treatment because the other 90% really don't want it.
That's right.
It's not just because they can't access it.
That's
right.
That's right. Assessment for the appropriateness of different MAT treatments.
That's replacement therapy. What about it? Say it again.
MAT treatments.
What about it?
Do any of you know of an assessment for the appropriateness of different MAT.
Well, everybody should be trained in it, but they don't do it.
That's exactly what Drew's talking about. Medication-assisted treatment. We don't have a systematized way of determining what patient should get what
treatment. We
did
when the drug was first released. It was for the description of Suboxone when it was coming out.
For withdrawal.
For replacement detox. Therapy was people that had... In their 40s, they've been to multiple treatments, criminal behavior. That's who it was supposedly designed for. And as soon as it came to market, it was 19-year-old kids that just started smoking heroin
and
2 weeks ago.
And I always, when I give my lectures, I always show the original studies on naltrexone, which essentially say the patients found it very satisfying, one of the most reinforcing drugs they'd ever taken. They're choosing it over naltrexone. Of course they do. It's opiates. Anything else?
Rebecca Fearing just said, I just had a client come to me because her son died of fentanyl.
Ugh, it's so common now. It's out of control.
That's a game changer. That
she's a psychic medium.
Yeah.
And carfentanyl is even worse.
Yeah, it is. That's like 100 times worse. Right?
A thousand times is what the city council said.
We had a question about fentanyl, too. I So
I just watched
okay,
this
your
whole
entertainment.
Lecture.
You're gonna give
the entertainment component.
Okay, yeah.
So there's something that we just talked about in the last 5 minutes that the junkie in me went, we should talk.
That's for me?
No, from what he said.
Oh.
So he still got that Vivitrol shot in the refrigerator.
Oh, you want
we
it?
Could sell for $400.
That's the junkie. It's good to know you're here, Bob.
He's always there. He's my shadow self.
But you should know, as it pertains to Vivitrol, Vivitrol is, when I've called them and asked for the medication for free for patients, they have provided it for me.
Yeah.
They've been very good about that.
The product's good.
But that's
it's a good
one-time
product. If you can get them to stay on it, again, if you can take Oro every day.
And believe me, they only give it for like two shots, three shots.
Let's go back to the alcoholics. I have a lot of alcoholics. Usually late 30s to early 50s, the ones that want it.
Right. And, it takes a while.
Day 20, they're getting nervous a week before, right? And they want it, and they'll pay for it, and they don't care, right?
Yeah.
That's who it's working for. I see it
for the motivated
for
patient.
You have to have motivation.
They're going to take it for a year and a half. I know how sobriety works. They're going to take it thinking that if they don't take it, that's what's
the solution.
The thing that's keeping them sober.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like a lot of times people get put on psych meds and they don't really know whether they work. Right. I always say around a year and a half, get to 18 months, 2 years, and then decide. Talk to your physician.
But you're saying people in the meantime need to work on recovery.
But I'm saying that the insurance isn't even going to pay for that. They're not even going to pay the $360 at the 8 month point.
Yeah.
You know, we have to get insurance. We have to get to the table. Those are the final partners with all of us.
Insurance?
We need to talk with them.
But, you know, there's attitudes changing there.
What are you talking about? They don't give a shit.
I see some change state by state, actually, with some of the insurance.
They almost went bankrupt with all the fraud that was going on with drug testing. So maybe they want to talk.
Yeah, with the urine testing. Yeah.
That was insane.
Unfortunately, when it comes to naltrexone implants, you see some of that, too, with the insurance. There was a CBS special not too long ago, actually, that talked about the illegal billing practice or shady billing practice around the use of these.
Oh, there was a weird.
They're billing for major surgical procedures in a surgical center, and this is not. This is a procedure that can be done in an office.
Gosh, Drew, I'm talking about sitting down with the heads of Aetna the managers of the insurance industry and talking from the clinical side, from the harm reduction side, and let's have a conversation of how to solve this and how to do it where everybody can live with the cost and consequences.
Yeah. And that is happening in certain states with certain insurance carriers.
Okay.
We're starting to have those conversations already and looking at the program, like the entire...
We're not convincing Drew.
It's not easy.
I'll tell you why. I've literally, and I've had these conversations, and it's stunning, and it's been a long time since I've had a conversation like this, with clinician insurance administrators who have, you don't remember this, who've said things to me like, you know, when they relapse the third time, they're not my concern, and I'm not a social agency. I really can't care. I can't comment whether it's good or bad.
Okay,
in other words,
statement.
Dead is what they want the patient.
No, they want them off their insurance. They think they're going to lose their job.
Yes.
Don't be so.
Yes.
You sound like me today. Jesus.
I'm just saying.
we have somebody on the line.
Oh, yes. Okay. Let's hear it. Let's talk to him.
Benjamin?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, there you go.
Benjamin, sorry to keep you sitting through all that. But you've actually to explain Brady what happened.
So Ben was actually – he visited a clinic out in Nebraska that uses our BioCorrects recovery program, which includes the use of this actual implant here. So he was a recipient of the implant along with all of the cognitive behavioral therapy, peer recovery support that we offer in our program, coupled with that center he went to specifically also offers. So he recently sent us an email about, you know, his you know, experience with this just this week. So it was pretty timely. So he can, I guess, tell his story of what he experienced going through our program or going through our program.
Go ahead, Ben. Let us hear it.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, kind of a lot of things you guys talked about as far as just the constant abuse of addiction. And I knew I needed long-term assistance. I mean, I don't want to give you the whole rundown of the 15 years of using opiates, but I've been an opiate addict and I've just done everything. I mean, Oxycontin, fentanyl, you name it all. It ended up being on Suboxone and I just couldn't get away from it no matter what I tried, it seemed like. So, I mean, I knew about naltrexone. I began to research it. the company out of Omaha, Nebraska called I Got Sober offered that. So I ended up calling him up and I met up with them and he told me about what they offered, about what he just explained to you. Yeah. And, we set up a date for the incision, and at the same date I got, connected with my recovery coach. And within 9 days I was in there and I received the double implant. And, the great thing about this was just astounding to me really was, I have a full-time job, family business, you know, we travel a lot. I couldn't afford to put my whole life on halt. Even as bad as I wanted to be clean, I just couldn't afford it to financially. I had too many things to, I couldn't stop. So the fact that I was able to take a day off work, go in for a 30-minute incision, and then literally by that night, 12 hours later, I remember sitting there for the first time in 15 years, that white knuckling feeling of wanting, that drive to want to use, it just wasn't there. Like I could feel peace in my mind. And I was like, I felt like, you know, I was breathing that night. And I was like, wow,
how long
I'm going to be able to,
how long had you been off opiates when you put the implant in?
Only 9 days, you know, and that's the whole thing too about it is that it is an unbelievable medication, but you have to have that drive to want to get.
Well, that's detoxed. What I'm definitely hearing that in your story is the motivation's a key part of this. But number one, the Suboxone.
Well, motivated him.
Hold on. You got off the Suboxone though, right?
I did. And it was tough.
And that's like a 2-week withdrawal. So you must have still been having some
still
stuff.
Withdrawals.
Yeah, still withdrawal symptoms, no?
Well, you know, I stepped down. So, I mean, this is not an advice or any, I hope nobody goes this route.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had such an experience with Suboxone. There's been times where over the 15 years where I detoxed and I was literally awake for 23 days. Oh, I never saw a second of sleep because
they don't put that in the brochure.
Right. In the original studies, it talks about how easy it is to detox patients. But,
it's not.
Why did Suboxone fail for you? Because this is the part I see.
I can tell you exactly why. Yeah. If I would have known, you know, before I knew anything about substance abuse or half-lives, how long detox is lost. I learned everything the hard way because I tried everything. Once I got into Suboxone, it was supposed to be the new way, the easy way. It was also cheaper, but it was the half-life and the detox. I mean, it was just, it had legs on it. I couldn't get away from it.
But why not just stay on a maintenance? This is what people will tell you. Like, oh, just stay on a dose. You're fine. You can back to your life. Take 16 milligrams
a day.
That's
what they do. They say it's totally easy to get off. Well, no, you don't want to get off. Stay on it forever.
Exactly. That's what they do. So why not that?
That's exactly it. For one, it's outrageous just because it gets you high. And if you want sobriety, you don't want to be on Suboxone. And there's not very many people who actually favorite call of all time.
Thank you. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like
no, I'm just saying.
It's unreal.
Okay, so then the flip side becomes what motivated you to not want to be high. This is what Bob
That's
is asking.
What I want.
So why were the motivation?
What was the real deal? Like
the
what?
Real deal is because you know, I mean, it was just obvious that I've strayed so far away from the beginning of my life and the path that I was headed. I could tell even with Suboxone, when I woke up every morning and knew that I would be sick if I didn't take this, I'm tired of being a prisoner and a slave to something
sure
I know I don't need.
Sure
you know what I mean? There has to be something else out here than this. This ain't good. You know,
Did
this ain't
good.
Did you
feel like you were going to die that way?
For real. Like, seriously. And you know, the thing about Suboxone is that I wasn't ever getting it. I don't
my
have insurance. I pay for everything out of pocket.
And I think Suboxone. I think buprenorphine. Look, it has its place, but
yes.
I think what has to happen is there should be a care plan to if you're going to put someone on.
Yes.
There should be a care plan on when you're getting off.
Yeah, but
not just set it and forget it.
You got to understand, my peers don't know how to do that. They just go, "Oh, you're having withdrawal symptoms. Well, just stay on it. No problem."
There's no incentive to take people off Suboxone
it's
either.
Hard
if you're a doctor with your,
it's hard to get people off drugs. You need a team of people. You need to work hard with the patient. It's much easier
you need
to go
a motivated
here,
patient. You need a motivated patient.
Even an unmotivated patient, it's so much easier as a doctor. Here, just fill this prescription. There's no way to end up a appointment faster than just open your prescription pad, and that's it. You're done. Get out of here. You stay on it. Don't worry about it. I don't mean it facetiously. I don't mean that it's aggressive. I just mean they don't know any better. They don't know how to do it. It's really hard work to get somebody off drugs. Really hard.
Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah, it's unreal. That's right. And I'm so delighted to hear your story because I have felt for quite some time that naltrexone was such a grotesque, you've heard me bring it up a million times, so grotesquely underutilized and underexamined. I'm not surprised by your story at all, Ben, at all. And now what's the treatment plan for you?
So the treatment plan is a 12-month treatment plan, and I got reconnected with my recovery coach, like I told you guys about, and I have a counseling session with Sergio. His name's Sergio. He's a master counselor. I see him every week. We have group meetings also, which is optional, but I love going to them. And then also I got a peer support specialist who calls me every weekend and just asks me about the process, you know, and the cravings, the how the implant itself is working week to week.
Speaking of a peer support specialist, there's a study, again, I use in my talks. Please, everybody, don't pay attention to these dogs. I apologize.
That's just
for that.
The dogs barking.
Yeah. Cut them up. Our next guests are here. Yeah. I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second.
So there's a guy named Keith Humphreys that did He did a little study where he showed that they went – I think it was a veterans group, and the emergency room visits, they had a group of doctors. Every addict came in the emergency room would either receive one of two things, a pamphlet and a little discussion from the doctor saying, here's what you need to do, here's where you need to go, this is what 12 steps are, this is where you go, here's a meeting. So, you know, just information about exactly where to go.
For 20 years.
Exactly. Then, as opposed to the second group was – I would like you to meet Bob Forrest. He goes to this meeting. He'll meet you tonight at the meeting. Bob, will you shake our patient's hand?
Yeah.
The difference between meeting attendance in one group versus the other?
100% zero.
That was the data. That was exactly the data. 100% with the warm handoff, 0% with the doctor telling him to go. So to your point about the peer group, Ben, that's just why I'm re-emphasizing that. Having that peer support, and for the most part, you can do it for free. It's free. Peers stay sober by being of service to other addicts. That's it. It's free. It's insane. It's free, everybody. Every insurance carrier, every state representative should be listening to me when I say that. Why aren't they running ads about that? The Truth Campaign should talk about that.
Well, why don't – here's the thing. It should be free. And
it
has
free.
Been – no, it's not. That's 12 not steps? What those people 12 were steps? Staying in New Jersey that we went to.
No, I know. That was different.
They were trying to make money off of 12-step. You know what I mean? Where they're going to act like they're doing a 12-step call, but they're actually going to get paid $900 a month ahead.
Yeah.
You know, that's the corruption of my industry, and I'll just say it, is awe-inspiring.
Well, but are you from out here?
I live here.
So you must have seen what we see out here is a lot of horrible stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it at a kid's birthday party. Yeah.
Southern California and Florida, those two. Bad. I mean,
well, now I heard Arizona's bad too. Now I heard that.
Yeah,
Arizona's back corrupt. They were so behind the eight ball there; they had to catch up.
It's funny. I was telling the governor of Dakota. I said, you know, you ought to have a licensed person supervising these programs, whatever they are. You know, see somebody with a license you can hold accountable. And he goes, you know, in our state, licenses have these huge barrier to entries just so people can't become licensed. It's really hard. Just like in KDAX in California, there's this giant barrier now. So we're not creating that many of them.
Well, that's a lot of the KDAX I was talking to. KDAX, well, what we call KDAX, chemical dependency counselors, who were the bread and butter of the industry for 20 years, they're not valuable anymore because the insurance industry says, well, what is really the value of that person?
Yeah.
I want a psychologist. I want a psychiatrist. I want to see evidence-based medicine from a doctor.
Well,
and so what it did was it pushed out the heart and soul of recovery of treatment centers and marginalized those people.
Yeah, that's not good. I would argue that when John Kelly's Cochrane meta-analysis comes out about 12-step, this conversation will shift.
Because if he's still there.
Where?
Kelly, the chief of staff for Trump?
No. John Kelly, the head of addiction at Harvard.
Oh, no. But what happened with Trump's going to, you know, all that stuff
you
listened to?
Oh, they're doing it.
It's not happening. No money is trickling down to the cities and states and counties.
On the treatment side, it's all the same old thing. Suboxone physicians. But on the punitive, the justice side has taken action hard and fast. So they are clamping down on distribution.
And NIH has a bunch of money now for treatment.
Let's talk about that.
Treatment.
Let's talk about that. And I want to talk to, and this is the worst thing I heard all weekend. The law that they're charging addicts who are alive when an addict dies is called the Len Bias Law. Did you know that?
No.
After the basketball player.
You mean they've charged
and
them with something?
All DAs in all the United States are being encouraged to prosecute the Len Bias Law.
So people, that
I wrote it all down. I meant to bring it.
People that overdose.
If you know, like the typical junkie situation, Bonnie and Clyde, boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah.
The girlfriend ODs and dies. Yeah. The boyfriend sits there crying, sobbing, trying to resuscitate her, calls 911. She's dead. He's charged with manslaughter, the Len Bias Law.
Yeah.
And it's starting to happen everywhere.
No, I know.
That is going to lead to more death.
Yeah.
people are going to abandon people, leave the scene.
Yeah.
They're not going to call 911. This is insanity of the Justice Department.
Yes, that's another misadventure. Of course, there's going to be lots of untoward stuff.
But I
like
want to talk to Len Bias's family. Do they really want that? Do they understand what that law creates? And do they want their son's name on it?
Well, first of all,
Len Bias was the greatest basketball, college basketball player. He was drafted by the Boston Celtics. He was going to be the future of the NBA. And on the draft night, when he was selected number one, he did some cocaine and overdosed and died.
Okay. Bob, do you believe that story?
What?
That the guy was perfectly clean. And
oh, my
night,
God. You're not going to tarnish the image of Len Bias.
A little cocaine.
Not around me, Drew.
Although now with fentanyl,
you know that's not what happened.
Now with fentanyl being laced in cocaine, now you can do that.
Sure.
Have one little party night and
that's
overdose.
That's true. But, of course, it was a much, much deeper story than that. The story went down as just this one exposure to cocaine
just
killed somebody.
Just let me have some fantasies left that there's goodness in the world.
You know.
So you think he was doing drugs at Maryland? Oh my God!
What do you think? I'm not besmirching his name. Why do you think that they're talking about this in terms of drug addicts, you know, co-using and being left to die?
It's such a mess. I mean, you're talking about people on the lowest of the low, and we're just going to use them to say they're the problem, prosecute them, put them in jail for 8 years.
Yeah, no,
crazy.
Putting drug addicts in jails, I don't know. Seems like a huge mistake.
But I don't, you know, people should be held accountable for their actions. There's no doubt about that.
Well, not unless we had treatment in jail, that was really good.
But here's the thing.
That's what you really
need. What it's going to cause is people are not going to try to resuscitate people.
People
are not going to call 911, and there's going to be more dead bodies than there already is.
I get that. I don't disagree with you.
But it's a Len Bias law.
Yeah, weird.
Crazy. Mm.
Well, we got to kind of wrap things up, guys. Other stuff you want people to know about the program? Ben, thank you. Are you still there?
I am.
Okay. Oh, there he is.
Anything from you?
Well, good
before we wrap
luck,
up?
Brother. Hang in there.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I just want to say that I hope people understand the benefit of naltrexone over all the other types of extended care. It can really change lives around.
Do.
It's a great thing.
We all do. I recommend it all the time. I told a kid last week, you know, you can just take the oral because he couldn't afford the Vivitrol, right? Or he's freaked out about it. And he's an opiate addict. And he was all panicked. Mm. Part of it was a junkie move. But I said, listen. They got oral medication. You can get it's generic.
Yeah.
It's $8.
Yeah.
And he's like, really?
Yeah.
You know? But see, junkies don't follow up. I knew as soon as I walked away from him, there's no fucking way he's going to do that.
Right. Well, this junkies is what Brady's talking about.
That's why you need.
Look,
but that's why you need a program like what you've got to help the kid
And it's also why you need
it.
Some legal consequences too. So you can. But if you use the law properly to leverage people into treatment, I think you'd have something. Yeah.
You know, and we, you know, this is not obviously a, you know, cure all at all. It's a nice tool to give someone a window of opportunity to deal with the other issues. And we see a lot of people will get one of these and then become compliant on oral later.
Well, that's what. Well, we haven't heard the oral transition yet, but Ben is essentially telling that about his treatment. He became compliant in treatment with it, and then if he had
you might
to
not
do
need
oral,
another one of these, you can just
do oral later. All right, Ben, thank you for joining us, man. We appreciate it. Good luck in your recovery. Congratulations on
thanks, Ben.
On being here and doing this.
You dodged a bullet, brother.
Yeah, good for you, man.
Seriously. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
The word.
And, Brady, any last stuff you want to say before we wrap it all up? Or?
No, just, you know, it's
where do
like
we
I said,
get
you know,
where can people find
BeatAddiction.com is our website, so that has a lot of information about our program and naltrexone and implants in general. Like, you know, there's multiple implants out there that are available around the country. So there's different types. We as a company, we're seeking actually FDA approval on one so we can get it into the payer system.
Which one? A long-acting one?
Long-acting.
How long? 6 months?
The initial one's three, and then a six behind. We've gone with a three first because we're replicating a product that's already approved in another country, so we're able to bridge that data so we can get hopefully a quicker. No, it's out of Russia, actually.
Oh, really?
If you have, let's see if I agree or agree with me on this, and if I'm not stating something too strongly. If you have a loved one who has been struggling in and out and you don't know where to turn, this is an excellent move. Try this.
It's a step in
the
right direction.
Whether it's alcohol or opiates, it's an excellent.
But see, I wanted to be very clear with our audience here. What he is offering is treatment with the medication.
No, always.
But people will take away, oh, you just need an implant, then you're going to be fine.
Right.
No, we're never going to be fine. We're just in the process of getting better.
You saw Bob's junkie move here. He's
I want that Vivitrol. We got to talk after.
Let me get through some specifics here. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. Drew, also at Rehab Bob Forrest, at This Life Podcast, at First Lady of Love, our producer. Join the email list at drdrew.com. Get our weekly opium series. We did a whole long series there you might like on how the opium crisis developed and where we are with it, all the way back to the the Chinese opium wars. We went to go all the way back, all the way to the present. It's a like 15-part series, and it's really good. It's really got everything there.
Better than Dreamland?
It is Dreamland. I have the absolute. He nailed it. Sam just nailed it. I interviewed him in my podcast, the Dr. Drew podcast.
What's he doing now?
He's worried about community and building community. It's sort of like that Bowling Alone book. I think he's going
to
come up with
something.
He should
go to Milwaukee.
But listen, our series is more historically complete, has a little bit of editorializing for me and stuff because I lived it. I lived through this thing. Are you
popular at doctor conventions?
No. I haven't been for a long time because I've been complaining about this, anyway, also check out the Swole Patrol Health and Fitness podcast I do with Mike Catherwood. Subscribe, tell a friend. Bob, anything else? Don't Die podcast.
Don't Die Wisconsin.
Please click on the Hydrolite banner next purchase. They're great. Summer months are dehydrated. Don't forget that. And if you like me, you can see me and Lawrence Avon on the 790 KBC Midday Live Talk Show. It's available as a podcast. We're there weekdays 12 to 3 Pacific time. Also in San Francisco on KGO, KBC here in Los Angeles. Everything's over at Dr.com. See the birthday party at Dr.com. It's going to be up as a video soon enough, and it's a podcast now. You can listen to it, Bob. You can actually hear it.
It's going to stress me out again.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
See you later.
One of the most crucial components of addiction recovery is accountability. Part of what makes addiction so difficult is the inability to self-regulate. Now, this is especially problematic for those in outpatient recovery or pain management program. And while the facilities require regular urine tests to ensure compliance, frequently, the actual tests are not even observed. And this led to an epidemic of falsified samples where patients either use someone else's urine or widely available synthetic urine. The result is a lot of addicts carry right on using undetected, and they get none of the benefits from treatment. The only objective test we have for addiction is the urine screen. Now, recently, I learned about a new solution that virtually eliminates the possibility of faking tests, even in facilities where they are unobserved. This is called ToxProtect, a DNA-verified drug test and lab service that provides 100% sample authenticity. ToxProtect was created by Genetox Labs, can be used in place of any standard urine drug test. It starts with simple one-time cheek swab to establish the patient's identity. Once submitted, each subsequent screening uses DNA testing to verify that that sample matches the patient. And additionally, ToxProtect screens for synthetic urine and irregular values that would indicate dilution or other adulteration. In other words, this pretty much guarantees accountability. I'm excited to see this service being used, and I think it will significantly improve an addict's chances for successful recovery. I'm going to be talking more about Genetox Labs and ToxProtect on future shows. Thankfully, ToxProtect is being used by more and more facilities every day. Be sure to ask for it by name wherever you or your loved one is receiving care. To get more information or share it with your facilities, go to drdrew.com/ToxProtect. That is drdrew.com/ToxProtect. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the single one I do by myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob, Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.